Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, oh, oh. Oh yeah. It's the power of an hour. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. The main man, Marvin Rone, and a crew. Coming to you live. The Empowerment Saturday. We got Dr. Rogers and a whole lot more. Stay with us. We rocking and rolling, y'all. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Better love. That's what we got. We're going to keep on coming with it. Welcome, welcome one, welcome all to Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of that motivation, that personal empowerment for African Americans. It's your main man, Marvin Rone, along with Brother George and Dr. Rogers coming to you live today. We hope that you tune in, call a friend. We're sorry for being late, but sometimes technical difficulties happen, but we got to roll on, people. You know, since we've been in this country, we had to adjust to so many situations and circumstances, and yet this is another, but we still strive to overcome. So we thank you for your patience as we get things in order here. But first, before we get started, it's the tenets of the NAAEA. You want to learn this. You want to teach it to your kids. You want to have family conversations about it. Let's start with the peace concept. Peace, P-E-A-C-E. Politics, you got to have a political agenda. Understand the politics of the system that you live in. That's the American system in every state and every town and every city that we live in. Must understand the political, understand how those systems work with, for, and against us. Next, economics. We got to have an economic agenda that speaks to the needs of our people. We just do. You got to understand capitalism and how it works. You got to understand money management, how it works. And you got to understand how that dollar works and make it work for us. We have a large economy, but we're not serving ourselves. So we got to learn how to serve ourselves inside of our economy so that our resources can work for us, that we can start businesses and corporations, do things with our money that work for us, that we can create a solid foundation and a solid platform for generational wealth. Now the A. It's critical. The A is critical. You have to have an athletic health, wellness, fitness, and a nutrition agenda. Alongside that, you need a mental health agenda. You need a mental and emotional health agenda. Yes, you do. You got to make sure that you're taking care of your mental, physical, and emotional health. Tip that we do, because we're not healthy physically, mentally, emotionally, many of us. So if you're doing it right, congratulations. If you're not, let's get on track today. And next, there is culture. We got to have relevant cultural programs just like this one that really helps to let us know what's going on in terms of guiding us in the right direction, in terms of our relationships with one another. And so it's so important that we continue to have a cultural platform that really teach us how to be ourselves again, relearn and unlearn some things. And the best and most important thing is that culture is a guideline. It teaches us. And so we're going to learn some stuff today from Dr. Rogers. But lastly is education. It's a comprehensive education that really gets us to looking at all aspects of our experience here in this country and then what we can do, continue our efforts to become better at being who we are. And now the Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Now, let me clarify, Brother Stan. This is my brother. He's gone away, but he's with us, and his words are impactful. Getting in to fit in is you being your authentic self. Finding out where you belong on this planet and then getting to work, of doing the work of working on yourself. And so we have to understand our position and our condition and work our way out of it, because we are the authentic, original kings and queens on this planet.
But we must unify. And don't, let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on Earth.
That's right. Make a difference right here, right now. And it's so important that we understand who we are, but create those institutions that define our own reality. And let's get started on that today. We got a great show for you today. And so we're going to go over now to our Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Brother George, bring it.
Yes, sir.
Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. All praise due to God.
All right. What you got for us today, brother?
Well, today our Kwanzaa principle is going to be Ujima, and it's collective work to build and maintain our community together and make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems, and solve them together. Man, that's a beautiful statement. That's a beautiful statement.
I like that.
And I hope that it grips our hearts. Once again, in the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read from Volume 2 of From Niggas to Gods by Akil. And in this segment, it's niggas must be killable before they're killed, the assassination of God. Most black people in America today have been psychologically duped into believing that they actually operate according to their own will. These misled perceptions cannot be further from the actual truth. You are indeed, in thought and in fact, still a slave. That's from Niggas to Gods, Part 1. Now, the segment that I'm going to read today is talking about, you know, the environment that surrounds us. All persons are a direct reflection of their atmosphere. Once again, all persons are a direct reflection of their atmosphere. This means that all persons will unconsciously reflect and imitate their atmosphere, imitate the things that they see in their atmosphere, and even become what they see in their atmosphere, become their atmosphere. Now, if all persons imitate, become, and reflect what they see in their atmosphere, then this means that the one who creates the atmosphere also creates the personality of the person in that atmosphere. The one who creates the atmosphere creates the thinking, the action, and the movements of the people who are immersed in that atmosphere. Do you understand this? Now, the question you want to ask is, who is that creates and controls your atmosphere? Who is the Lord of your world? Look around. You might not see your interior decorator face to face, but I am telling you that somebody has been hanging pictures on the interior walls of your mind. Somebody has been pumping images, pictures, sounds, and in other words, pumping thoughts into your brain. Your mind is not your own. Nope. You are manufactured, son. You are mortal man-made product. Now, I think that most of our listeners, you know, sometimes things that are said are preaching to the choir. But to those who listen to this at another time or to the young folks that's out there, basically he's talking about that this world that we live in, which has been produced for us, has been made by somebody else. And it's made in their image. And a lot of these things are what help you to produce your thought product, your thought product and process, I'm sorry, and how you determine how you want to figure out solutions to problems. A lot of that is already thought out for you, and you simply just go through the process of using it because that's normally how you do things. But sometimes, I think what this brother is saying in this book is, a lot of times, we as African Americans have to stop and think about the solutions that we just automatically come to a conclusion about because someone may have already laid the foundation for a particular action that you'll come to or conclusion that you'll come to. So, Brother Marvin, thank you. And it's back to you, brother, unless you got a question.
All right, Brother George, great, great segment. We love it so much. I'm going to move on over to, I do have a question, but I want to save it because I want to get to Dr. Rogers to give him his time, if you don't mind. But
yes, sir.
I'll definitely ask you on next week. So on to Dr. Rogers. Thank you for the segment, brother. I know you're going to be on the line. Let's bring Dr. Rogers in, right? Dr. Rogers. Are you there?
Yes,
Dr. Rogers. Yes.
Yes, yes.
Welcome to the show, brother. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Hotep to both you and Brother George and our listening audience. Pleasure to be here, man.
Peace to you as well, Hotep. Yes. Thank you. We're going to continue our series. And you've been laying it down, so we want to continue to educate our people on the work of Dr. Woodson and more. So we're going to turn it over to you, Brother George, and I will be live on the line with you. So we'll turn it over to you, and thank you again, Dr. Rogers. Let's welcome Dr. Rogers in, brothers and sisters.
Yes, yes, indeed. Brother George?
Yes, sir.
Yes, it's on you, Dr. Rogers.
Oh, you want me to go right into it? Okay, great. Beautiful.
Yes,
beautiful.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Greetings and peace and blessings to all of you, my brothers and sisters, and Brother Marvin and Brother George, for this wonderful opportunity for us to get together as brothers and sisters and learn more detailed of our history and embrace it and embody it and practice it and all of the things that we need to do. This is a very, very critical format that you're doing here, Brother Marvin. I don't, you know, sometimes, a lot of times when you're doing things, you don't always know the power of it. And so sometimes you have to step back and take a look at it. And I've done that, and this is a powerful approach, you know, starting with Dr. Bridges' book, Recapturing the African Mind, and then coming in here with our ancestors and listen to what they say is the same thing that Dr. Bridges is saying. And that's a powerful connection. And that's the way I've tried to keep it in terms of the presentations that I've done here. I wanted to keep the format synced and linked together.
And very clearly, it has the ability to empower. So what we've done is, over the last two sessions, I've kind of looked at some of those chapters. There's 18 chapters to the Miseducation of the Negro. This is Carter Woodson's landmark work. And he's done other books now. He's done a lot of books. Yeah, he's written books on the black church, books on education. But this is landmark. And actually, it wasn't written in the way of a book. These were, as I indicated to you in previous sessions, that these were essays and speeches that he had given. And then they were all put together and compiled. But they were carefully compiled. And they were compiled in a way that they linked with each other. And they sent out a message within themselves. That's the beauty of this now. So when he does chapter one, he didn't, you know, you go down to chapter 17, that wasn't a continuation. It was a link. These are linking chapters to each other that give us very clearly a message. And that's one of the things that I have tried to do. And that's kind of what I'm going to do today. I want to make sure that that linking is clear for you. And if there's any questions around how it's done. And then the bottom line is to link all of this to recapturing the African mind on those days that Dr. Bridges makes his presentation. So that's really what the whole idea was. As I indicated, 18 chapters to the Miseducation of the Negro. Carter Woodson was a giant of a historian. He had not only just wrote history and researched history, he created an institution to study history. He started with the Association for the Study at that time with Negro Life and History, which was the umbrella organization. It was the charter group to bring together scholars, educators who were at that time, who were in your Howard universities and who were going to your Morehouses and your Tuskegee's. And even some of them had even creeped over into the Harvards and to the Yales and to the Princetons, and they were studying our history. And so he created this institution to bring all of this together to write about our people. And the other historical organization, the main one, European group, was the American Association of Historians, did not talk about us except as captives. They only talked about captives. They didn't even go so far as to decipher the work and the vision of Frederick Douglass. They only wrote about the problematic area. You had no scholars that were members of that organization until late into the 60s and early 70s did they become part of that. And even then, you know, it was sort of really subsidiary to the real scholarship. They published a journal called the Journal of American History, you know, definitely left us out, unless they talked about slavery. Then they had us in there, or some of those other things such as that. So anyway, Woodson knew that he would have to create this institution and this pillar to study our history and our background. And so the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, which now we call it American Life and History, was created for that reason. Now, it's not enough just to have the institution. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to work it? Well, what he did then is he decided to create some kind of a communication system between the scholars at Morehouse, Howard, Tuskegee, Tennessee A&I, North Carolina Central, St. Albans, Shaw. All of those scholars were kind of spread out. We didn't have Zoom back then, no cell phones, didn't have some of the communication mechanisms that you have now, so we couldn't really see what each other was doing. So he created a journal, and he called it the Journal of Negro History, and it was a peer-reviewed journal. He wanted scholars who had studied history diligently and knew how to study and research history to come together and write papers about our life and culture. And they would write papers that got into detail about who we were. They would go into our community, study their communities. One of the greatest studies of a black community in America was done by the mighty W.E.B. Du Bois when he wrote a book called The Philadelphia Negro. And that was an assessment in detail of the community of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia was a very active black hub. And it was designed, a lot of right there. I think it had a lot to do with the Quakers were there. And plus, Philadelphia was the first nation's capital, in a sense. And so Du Bois did that. That's the kind of stuff that went into the Journal of Negro History. And then what we talked about in one of our sessions, we talked about the camaraderie of Carter Woodson with some of the contemporary names that we know, I'm sorry, not contemporary, with some of the past names that we know and have heard and studied. Marcus Garvey, W.B. Du Bois, Arturo Schomburg, and a lot of the ilk of those of that kind of folk were all in touch with Carter Woodson. They even wrote in his journal. Woodson wrote into the paper called by Marcus Garvey called The Negro World. He wrote columns in that. There was a powerhouse newspaper man called T. Thomas Fortune. T. Thomas Fortune wrote for Marcus Garvey. T. Thomas Fortune wrote for Carter G. Woodson. And he worked with Carter G. Woodson on any day. So that's important. They were all working together. These weren't separate incidents. They were bonding as friends. They may have disagreed on theories and ideas. That's okay. That's cool. But the idea is that you work together. Ujamaa, that's the whole principle. Let's work together. That's what it means. It's not. It doesn't mean that we have to agree on everything. A lot of stuff I don't agree with, people say. But that's me, you know, and then they obviously try to prove it or disprove it. So that's the nature of what Carter G. Woodson was doing. And so then with the journal, he knew that that was kind of high academic. There's only a certain community of people that might look at that. Most people on the average grassroots folk, factory worker, just the farmer, would not read the Journal of Negro History. So he created something that they could read, even the teachers, because he wanted teachers and educators to read it. He created something called the Negro History Bulletin, which was a magazine with an ebony get type thing. And it featured great folks that you hadn't heard about. And all of this was going on at the same time. Now, also, in another corridor of the black community, there was something else happening. There was an influx of very, very important black newspapers. Papers called the Chicago and Pittsburgh Courier, the Amsterdam News, the Cleveland Call and Post. These were powerhouse mechanisms that the grassroots people read. And a lot of those papers allowed Woodson to write columns in there and other scholars to write columns. There was a man by the name of J.A. Rogers who had gotten, was working with Arturo Schomburg. And he was taking some of the information that Arturo Schomburg was bringing back into New York and creating a column talking about people you had no clue about. Talking about how African Americans were part of the Medici Empire of Italy and how the Moroccans were Africans, the Moors. He talked about the Moors in this column. And it was like a little cartoon, but they were going into those newspapers. You see, that's the connection. And on top of that, now check this out. All of that's going on, right? On top of that, there's another brother by the name of Elijah Poole, who ended up becoming Elijah Muhammad, and he ran an organization called the Nation of Islam along the same kind of line that Marcus Garvey Carter Woodson were trying to create at the same time. And he created a publication called Muhammad Speaks. And he did some of the same things. So you had all of this going, attempting to educate our people, trying to get folk awake about who they are, where they came from, and what was empowering. Because we had come out of a horrible monster system known the transatlantic slave trade. It had destroyed our people. It had destroyed our minds. And it had taken seeds and created trauma and mixed the bloodlines and done all kinds of things that would keep us from producing. Now, we did produce. We did produce. But there were some serious blockers in there that would not allow for us to continue to go. Now, you know, we don't, and I know I don't have enough time, but the thing that would be of interest now is to sit back for just a minute, close your eyes, and think about where we are today and ask yourself, is this stuff still necessary? Is the American Empowerment radio program necessary? Think about that. I just got through writing a letter about 15 minutes ago to go to a judge for a young man that I knew and was mentoring to that shot somebody at a gas station because they got into a fight and he called his girl a B. And he shot it. Nice little young man. He wasn't really a real bad kid, but he had no business doing that. And I had to try to explain to the judge in the letter as best as I could that, you know, that wasn't this foundation. Where are we today and where is this history? Well, in Harlem, in Pittsburgh, in Chicago, in those places, there were attempts to try to do that. And so that's why I think this is so very, very important. All of that is what Woodson is writing about. He started his book off, The Seed of the Trouble. He'll tell you where it came from. He looked at how we missed the mark. Now, remember now, he's not writing this in the flow of a book. He's writing these are various speeches. And in this book, The Miseducation of the Negro, Woodson addressed all of the dynamics of education, miseducation, of what it was. He even goes so far as to explain what is real education and what is miseducation. And, you know, he shared this with us. And he did it in a way that would help us self-actualize, would help teachers and educators and parents self-actualize and know that we have to be able to think and use this knowledge to change our needs. We can change if we know this knowledge. If you know that you are somebody and you came from greatness and you have down inside of you the power, young people can change. They don't have to be shooting and gangbanging and dancing up and down poles. They don't have to do that once they know who they are. And so, but we have to do the work and dig some more. He went on to note in his book that it wasn't just learning words and getting a diploma and wearing a yellow cord around your neck and saying that you were consumer this and consumer that. He said it's being able to take this. He argues that you need to be able to take this and use this knowledge gained to generate new ideas that can transform your community. That's what you got to do. You got to transform your community. And you got to transform your family and yourself. That is the process. Carter went on to say in the book, and what he was trying to explain, is that the education given to the black man didn't do that, didn't prepare him for society. That's what he meant by we missed the mark from the truth. These are the chapters that he had. Education was not in our control. You had white men stepping up, putting in some money, building schools. Now, you think that some white man is going to build a school and you teach about him being a slaveholder? So when he give you the money to build that school, you better talk right. Or either you need to build your own. And that's what he said, what he said there. And he got mad at the black church because the black church had the resources, had the know-the-literal to do it, but they weren't doing it. They weren't building institutions. They weren't building educational centers to teach the people. They're teaching them about Jesus and the Bible, and I'm not saying anything wrong with that. That's cool. Got Sunday school, BTU. You need some other kind of schools up in there to teach as well, too, to tie in with that. And then you be able to use that as an education. And so he attacked the black church to a certain extent. And when I say attack, he didn't, I mean, you know, he wrote a book called The Negro Church in America. He wrote about that, gave us an idea. And a lot of that, when you look at it, it really was based on how these churches, a lot of them were started. They were money by the plantation owners and stuff like that. So, you know, once whites got involved in it, you know, obviously it would be a way to, you know, obviously control it. The education that was being given to us in public schools was continuing to perpetuate white supremacy and oppression. That's from north to south, east to west. Doesn't matter where it came from. That's what it was attempting to do. And so the real development is needed at the grassroots level, at the community level. True education, which he said, should cause an individual to think and to do for himself in order to create solutions that can evaluate him into a self-sustaining individual. Now, that's deep. I'm quoting right out of Woodson. True education should cause an individual to think and do for himself in order to create solutions that can evaluate him into a self-sustaining individual. And so that's the skill that we need to create with the educational system that we have. We have the talent to do that. We can do that. You know, and we can do it in a way that it doesn't take forever. It can be done together. I lived in a city that focused a lot on education. Dr. Bridges and I both were from the same hometown. That's my homeboy. And we came under the same educational system, even though I got a few years ahead of him. But it's the same thing. I even had to, I was in school. I went to school in the same school my mother taught in. So you know I ain't going to mess up. But sometimes I did. I would tell a lie and say I ain't got no homework and so that I could go outside and play. And my mother was cool. She didn't say anything. And, I mean, all she had to do was go right down the hall to my teacher and ask her, did he have any homework? And, you know, I'm so blinded, I thought she wouldn't do that. And I paid her many a price for that, needless to say. So, anyway, Woodson goes on to say that education has to be geared toward the social uplift of our people. And when you look at those chapters, like the educated Negro leaves the masses, that's one of the chapters, chapter six, the failure to learn to make a living. I remember we used to have a bank in our classroom. We used to save money, and we had like a school bank. And the students were like the bank tellers and the president and all that stuff. And we would put 25 cents, 50 cents in there, stuff like that. But we were learning to save. Now, you got to also remember now, you know who's around at this time, Booker T. Washington. And the Tuskegee experiment is going on at the same time. And George and Booker T. Washington had his hands on a lot of stuff. So Washington and Carter Woodson did work together. From what I gather in looking at some of the research, there was a little bit of a synergy in there, but they still worked together. He published a lot of things on the Tuskegee experiment and the work of George Washington Carver. I suggest it to all of our listeners, if you're still there, to take a look at the Journal of Negro History sometime and look at the kind of articles that they were having there and the kind of studies that they were doing about our people. And then he went on to talk about distinction and weaknesses. You know, he looked at that and gave a detailed description of what they were. And some of that thing was that we went out and got them our big shot education degrees. We went to Princeton, Yale, came back, got a job, left the black community and went out there and lived with white folks. That kind of mess, you know. And then we get that bourgeois thing, and our scholars have written about that. E. Franklin Frazier wrote a book called The Black Bourgeois, and he called Dr. Bruce and I's hometown the capital of the black bourgeois. And a lot of that comes from paternalism and looking at our white fathers and getting them to help us and do that. But then he just doesn't lay out all the complaints. He comes up with suggestions. And to that effect, I want to bring somebody else into this picture that augments, you know, all of what we've just said. Now, you're getting the whole idea of recapturing the African mind. Dr. Bridges is giving you that on the alternative Saturdays. So you got that. But I want to bring one more person in there who does the same kind of thing. He talks about the mental slavery of the African American, and that's a brother out of Chicago by the name of Jake Carruthers. Jake Carruthers wrote a book called Intellectual Warfare, where he laid out a lot of what was done intellectually to that. Now, you know what's also interesting, because now we're dealing with folk in the 1920s, 1915, 1914. That was some brothers out there in the 1800s, 1850, 1860, who dealt with the same thing and who saw the same thing that Carter Woodson saw. They saw the same thing that Jake Carruthers saw. They saw the same thing that Bruce Bridges saw. They saw the same thing that Malefi Asante saw, John Henry Clark. And one of the brothers that did that was a man by the name of Edward Wilmot Blyton. And Blyton made this statement, and Carruthers quoted this statement in his book, The Intellectual Warfare. He said, "All educated Negroes suffer from a kind of slavery in many ways far more subversive of the real welfare of the race than the ancient physical fetters. The slavery of the mind," this is 1850, brothers and sisters, 1850, "the slavery of the mind is far more destructive than that of the body. But such is the weakness and imperfection of human nature that many of those who bravely fought to remove the shackles from the body of the Negro transferred them to his mind." That's me. And we know that. We can see that. As much as I love him and I like the work he does, Frederick Douglass made some mistakes about that. They asked him to go to Africa as a missionary. He said, "I ain't going to Africa." "About what?" And he refused to go. They wanted to appoint him an ambassador. He wouldn't go. And then on top of that, he married a white woman. I'm going to leave that alone, but that's what he did. So Blyton is talking Woodson. Now, what I just read from Wilmot Blyton, listen to this statement from Carter Woodson. He said, "The education of the Negro then must be carefully directed, lest the race may waste time trying to do the impossible. Leave the Negro to believe this and thus controls his thinking. If you can thereby determine what he will think, you will not need to worry about what he will do. You will not have to tell him to go to the back door. He will go without being told. And if there is no back door, then you know what the rest is." Now, that's the same thing that Edward Wilmot Blyton said in a different way, but talking about the power of that mental slavery, what it does. Woodson went on in his work to note that the imperative of European society was to control the educational socialization process of Africans. He knew that. And for the sake of conceptually incarcerating them, and this comes out of a quote from Brother Cambone, the Cambones, wrote about this and talked about this. It's saying the Association for the Study of Black Psychologists have worked diligently on this whole mental thing. And then the whole thing about what is education and what is miseducation, as I said earlier, was in there about. Now, Jake Carruthers does attempt, just like Dr. Bridges does, attempt to explain how do you unshackle the African mind. And Woodson did the same thing. Now, what Woodson said in one of his chapters, which is in the book, he said, first you got to understand the Negro. And what that means is, who is the Negro? And I don't mean that mess that the white boy Robert Warren Penn wrote about who speaks for the Negro. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not the kind of meaning of that. He wants him, he said, Woodson said in chapter 13, understand the Negro first. You got to understand your people. And then once you do that, you can then do what he did in chapter 14, the new program. He lays out a program on how to do that. It's called, and that's a part of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. And by the way, the convention for association is still meeting. It's still a viable organization, still working and dealing, still publishing the Journal of Negro America. It's called now the Journal of African American History. They're having their convention in Montgomery, Alabama, in September. I guess I got a text from one of our listeners, Brother Lush, and it talked about the fact that the convention is coming up. And if you ever get a chance to go, trust me, you will not be sorry. You got scholars from everywhere. They have all in the room reading papers among their colleagues, question and answer, just like we're doing now. They do that at the convention, but they do a lot of it. They do like 4 days, 3 to 4 days of nothing but just scholarship. And I remember when I used to go a lot, they would sell recordings of these sessions. I've heard people like John Henry Clark, Malefi Asante, all kind of folks stuff. I even had the chance to do one myself over my mentor, Dr. Earl Thorpe. We went to the convention in Charleston, South Carolina, and did a paper and a presentation on Dr. E. Thorpe. And then they have book vendors there and a lot of that kind of stuff. Because see, that's another part of this equation, is you got to have a place to get the resources. And see, that's what Woodson did with the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. See, at that time, 1920s, you know, you didn't have Google. You didn't have search engines and computers and all of those. You couldn't go pull stuff out. Harvard was not going to let you into their library unless they knew you. Yale was not going to let you use their library because they're the ones that had the top books. Eventually, Howard was able to get some based on a gift by Spingarn. The Spingarn, that's why they call the library the Spingarn Library, were able to donate books. You didn't have no bookstore around during that time. So you couldn't get to the resources to even study about slavery, much less write about it. So Woodson was creating the mechanisms to help get there. So a lot of those folks who were in college were able to get into the libraries and go down into the dusty archives of those libraries and do research. By the time I got to university, they had microfiche. That was one way, and I did a lot of my research work on black newspapers. But they didn't have the black newspapers. I had to go through the microfiche machine. Those were photographs of the papers put into this film-like thing, you know, for those who haven't seen that, and you read the paper that way. That takes you forever. I'd go to the library at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'd be in there at 8:30 at night. Because they didn't have the sophisticated system. So the journal, the Association for the Study of African American Language and History, was a director for that. And that's why the Schomburg became so important, and the spin guard, because they brought in the technology. They were able to set up ways that scholars could go in and learn. And then in the book, so he came up with a new program. He even created a pedagogy that talked about how to do it. That's chapter 15. It's called Vocational Guidance. And then he even evaluated somebody who would go through this process. If you did all this and went through that process, he evaluated what you would look like. And that's in chapter 16. It's called The New Type of Professional Man Required. And then at that point, you can be a higher striving in the service of the country, which is chapter 17. And then the concluding chapter, 18, is actually the curriculum called The Study of the Negro. And that concluded the book. But the whole idea of unshackling the African mind, this was the process. He said the Negro must now do for himself or die out as the world undergoes the adjustment. The world moves real fast. You know that. We see it every day. You know, and you have to be ready to do that. And we have to become leaders, and you have to have the right leadership. You have to have a knowledge-based leadership that's independent of the system. We see a lot of black politicians, but we you can listen to them talk. You know where they're getting their stuff from. I don't know what you think of the brother Cory Booker, but I can hear that Howard University thing when he at the Supreme Court hearing of the justice that was going forward and some of the things that he said that were very, I thought were very profound. He said the worst, Woodson went on to say that the race needs workers, not leaders. And that was one piece, and I really wish I could find it, where Woodson actually described what we need to do using the analogy of a beehive. He said the people that make the honey is not the queen bee. She directed it. The worker bees make the honey and the one that protects it. And he went on to talk about, you know, that process. And that's an interesting analogy. I did it with my grandkids, and we talked about the beehive and what it means to be a worker and to be together. Brother George today talked about Yajira, collective work and responsibility. That's a beehive. That's what happens in the beehive. And they're not in there fighting. They're not in there cussing each other out by, I made more honey than you did, and you ain't nothing, blah, 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 blah. They don't do that. They work. We got to follow that path as ourselves as we build our community. Stop fussing with each other about crap, stupid stuff. Let's just work. And he said if you do that, such workers will solve the problem, which race leaders talk about, raise money to enable them to talk more about it. We some great talkers now. You know, we got some powerful orators. But what do they really change? Is what he raises here in this description. That's what you're talking. 1933. What did they really change with all that speaking? He went on to say it may be well to repeat here the saying that old men talk of what they have done, young men of what they are doing, and the fools of what they expect to do. Let me repeat that. Because this is us right here. Old men talk of what they have done. Young men of what they are doing. And fools of what they expect to do. The Negro race has a rather large share of the last mentioned class. Page 118 in the Miseducation of the Negro. Check it out, brother. And then we talk about, as I said, Woodson challenges the whole reconceptualization of leadership within the framework. And at the time, obviously, the principles of Fawcett weren't there, but it is truly a Ujima framework It's a collective work and responsibility that Brother George was talking about. That's what Woodson. So when he said that, I said, now look at that. We are really all connected. And continuing on in that unshackling the African mind concept, Carruthers, in his book, contends that the efforts towards institutional development must first and foremost be concerned not with remediation, but with the ultimate liberation of the African community. So we don't need to be worried about mediation. You know, you hear a lot of talk about we are remediated. No. He said that's not what we need to do, and I truly agree with him. He said we must come and look at the ultimate liberation of the African community and what that means. What is the ultimate liberation? What is the model? So we want to unshackle the slave mind. And if we do that, what does that look like? What would that look like? And describe that. And that's what Woodson did. He wrote in chapter 16, the new type of professional man required. And he laid that out. So, you know, both Woodson, Jake Carruthers, you know, looking at this research and the teaching style of all of this are kind of like compelling us to engage it. And as you know, Carruthers is an ancestor as well, compel us to engage in and support research for the sake of reconstructing the history and culture of African people. We've got to do that. We have got to restructure the history and the culture. Brother Marvin mentioned the thing about culture of African people. And then we have to facilitate, it ain't just enough to do that. We have to facilitate pedagogy informed by this research. And I like what Brother Malefi Asante is doing, has done, obviously, in some of his work by creating the principle of Afrocentricity. And that's what he did. So with that, my sisters and brothers, Brother George, I know it's at that 2 o'clock hour. You want to open up, give our audience a chance. I think that you would do well to go back and do another reading of Carter Woodson's book, The Miseducation of the Negro, and look at how those chapters are linked. And they flow too, but I'm more push the idea that they are linked for a reason. So in chapter 14, when he talks about the new program, and then in chapter 15, he deals with the cultural aspect of that and calls it the vocational guidance. That's a linking, I think, is a little bit more than so that the flowing of things. And then understanding this machine that he has built, Richard has built, that still exists today. Not that we build a lot of stuff, but it doesn't last no more. It ends up going out. Garvey's Unaya still lasts today. The Nation of Islam program still lasts today. And it's still vital. It's still doing what it did in 1920. And there's one other group that we kind of leave out a lot, but I think they do have some significance. I think we would have to do a careful study and review of that. That might be a good project to take on. And that's the work of Brother Noble Drew Ali and the Moorish Science Temple. My brother got some deep stuff he's into. But we just got to get into it more and look at it. So with that, Brother Marvin, I turn it back over to you.
All right, Dr. Rogers, thank you. Thank you. That's a complete education. And again, that is what we need, of course, as one of the tenets of the NAAEA is education. And that's what we so desperately need. So thank you, Dr. Rogers, for that. We're going to go to Q&A, but I want to go back for 1 second to what you mentioned in chapter 13 about the program. I want to see if we can,
yes,
as we move forward, maybe go into depth on that, or maybe
okay,
another chapter that you agree to. But I think we need to go down into the material now and dig in just a little bit. We've done the surface work. Now let's see what he encourages us to do in terms of the work that we need to do. So without delay, Dr. Rogers, again, I'm suggesting we look at 13, but you can do whatever you want to do, and we're going to go to the lines now. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right. Any questions for Dr. Rogers before we go to Q&A?
I would like to, because of the interest of time, I would prefer to go to the lines, and I can ask this question on, you know, another time.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Let's
yes,
see
sir.
If we can get to we're going to go. Am I coming in clear?
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's go over to 8502. We're cranking up the Q&A time. 8502, you're live on with Dr. Rogers, Dr. George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Good afternoon. This is Herbie White. I'm in Durham, North Carolina. And it's always a pleasure to listen to Dr. Rogers and the information that he provides and how important this information is.
Thank you, sir.
About
thank you.
That he talks about and that Brother Bruce Bridges talks about in recapturing the African mind. You know, when they replaced our minds with their ideology, it causes a confusion. It's sort of like if somebody took your medicine and changed the instructions on your medicine.
Right.
Mm.
Whenever you took it, instead of making you better, it would make you worse.
True.
So that's why I'm just saying how important this is and how much I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, brother, so much for tuning in and calling. All right. Let's go down to 0946. 0946, you're on live with Dr. Rogers. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from? 0946. All right. Well, let's move down to 3347. 3347, you are on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Rogers today? 3347. Think they're listening today, Dr. Rogers?
Yep, that's okay.
Yeah, your crowd is a good crowd. That means you got them thinking. All right, let's go on over to 9282. 9282, you're live. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. Peace, brothers.
Hey,
excellent job
show,
doing all of it. Yes, sir. You know who that is, don't you? Brother Booker here in Richmond,
yes.
Virginia.
Hey.
Yes, sir. Look, in line with Dr. Rogers talking about, Dr. Bruce talking about, you know, I hate to think that they preach into the choir, you know? I'm sure a lot of us online that's listening to them on page with them. We've heard this before, and I do hope, not hope it's a negative term, I do pray a lot of our brothers and sisters out there listening to this that have not heard it before. And in doing so, they can get an understanding of it to where we as a people can take some action. Because really, brothers, the email you sent out the other day that had the attachment with Adolf Hitler, I mean, if we read that and understand that, what Adolf Hitler supposedly said, it not only does it add emphasis to what Dr. Rogers was talking about and Dr. Bruce was talking about, it gives you it serves as validity to it, what they were talking about, and we need to gather our understanding of it so we can move forward and act on what they're talking about. Now, if you give me 2 minutes, brother, I want to read what you sent us, that what Hitler supposedly said, okay? It said, Hitler said, even in his death, he will start World War III. One of his soldiers asked him, Hitler said, he said, I will start it even, and one of his soldiers asked him, Hitler replied, the day mankind finds out what I was trying to defend this nation Germany from, then that's the day World War III will start. For on that day, mankind will learn that I was trying to save my nation from the Freemasons, the Illuminati, the Jews. For if the Americans win the war, then they will conquer the world and forever be a slave in the Jews and of the Jews, and they will try to conquer God. Do you know who America has in its possession? Hitler asked. No, the soldier replied. The Americans has the jewels of God. The Americans have stolen God's precious jewels. What do you mean? His precious jewels? The soldier asked. Hitler said, America has stolen the Jews of God, his jewels, the Negroes.
The one that drives the daddy.
They are the true Hebrews. Now, two questions. If Hitler said that, if it is true, then let's drop the mic. Hitler was saying back then, we are, black people, the children of God. And the only way America will rule this world is if they control God's children, the jewels of God. And what the brother's been talking about is the controlling of our minds, and not only controlling our minds, but with the control of our minds, they rule the world. Let's drop the mic. We need to understand that. If it's true, if Hitler said it, if Hitler said that, and if what he said is true, understand what's in that message of who we are, the jewels of God, the original Hebrews, brother. We need to act on that. That's why I say I hope we're not preaching to the choir. And even if we are preaching to the choir, it's time that the choir takes some action. Mm-hmm. I'll end with that, brother.
All right. Thank you, brother. And I want to take credit for that. That was Brother Khalil that sent that. So I passed that on to Brother Khalil. Thank you, Brother Khalil. And thank you for calling, brother. I appreciate the comment.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go down to 01. Thank you, brother. 0148. You're on live with Dr. Rogers. Do you have a question or comment, and where are you calling from, sir?
This is Brother Teddy calling from Montgomery, Alabama, in the 334, home of Montgomery, Alabama. Look, it's real. It's live. I don't think I could follow what that brother just had read off, but I will follow with this. On September 29th through October 1st, Thursday through Saturday, right here, Montgomery, Alabama, will be the 107th conference and meeting of that organization that was spoken of by Dr. Rogers, the Association for the Study of Life and History of African Americans. And so here, if it is all possible, those 3 days will be powerful days. The theme will be dedicated to black health and wellness, black health and wellness. So that's the theme this year. And hopefully you all could listen in and schedule, if possible, those days. So I just wanted to share that to back up all of what Dr. Rogers and everyone else has said. September 29th through October 1st, Thursday through Saturday, right here in Montgomery, Alabama. Thank you so very much for picking my call. And as always, I'm listening and learning.
Thank you, brother. All right, Dr. Rogers putting out some great information today. And you there, Dr. Rogers?
Yes, I'm here. Mm-hmm.
All right. So conference is going on. Hopefully we can get that information out to the people as we get closer, and maybe we can get a few delegations to go down and be a part of the conference. If not, we'll listen live. All right. All right, let's move on. Did you have a comment, Dr. Rogers, before we move on?
I was just thinking, and I agree, We are dispensing information, no doubt about that. But I think it goes even a little deeper. You know, this is a plan, and a plan can be information, but this is a plan of action. It's just deeper than information, because when you think of information, you think of going to the encyclopedia and looking at something, oh, yeah, that's good information. Now, this ain't information. This is a plan of action that you have created here with this organization to get your people to do. So don't chalk it off and walk away as info. To say that this is deeper than info. So I just wanted to add that.
I like that. Let's slide on over to 5972. 5972, you're on live with Dr. Rogers, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. Hotep to all the brothers in the studio today, Dr. Rogers and Brother George and you, Brother Marvin. Called from Durham, North Carolina, and right on it with Dr. Rogers. And I really, really enjoy what he's talking about. And one point that I'd like to make very quickly, in case you have some other callers, and that is I appreciate the fact that he brought in the cadre of brothers. And there were some sisters, too, who were doing the same thing to promote our history and our culture. And I think that's a good lesson for us to follow today, even though we may not agree on everything. But anybody who's trying to do good or speak good for the masses of our people, we need to recognize them and to understand what they're doing. And the fact that he talked about one of my favorite people who I hadn't talked about in a while and who most people don't even mention, and that was Edward Wilmot Blyden. And he talked about Ed Wilmot Blyden, and, you know, that was good. And Jake Carruthers and Fortune and Frederick Douglass, too. And I like the fact, too, that he put Frederick Douglass into his proper place, because a lot of times we look at these people as infallible, as if they made no mistakes and if they were perfect people, but all of us have some problems, and Frederick Douglass had some serious problems. There's no doubt about it. We quote him, we love him, but he had some serious problems. You know, one that Dr. Rogers mentioned about his connection to Africa. Now, he didn't make that connection with Africa, didn't want to go to Africa like Dr. Rogers said, but I've been doing some studying on him, and Dr. Rogers knows this, I'm sure. He did, though, go over to Scotland and talked about his Scottish heritage. You see, so we have some problems. Anyway, not going to do another lecture because I really enjoyed what Dr. Rogers talked about and the fact he included Noble Drew Ali and Elijah Muhammad, who are some of those people that most of the people who are going to be at Association for the Study of Afro-American Life and History, who tend to be our educated people, they don't include. So I really want to thank Dr. Rogers for including them also.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. And Dr. Bruce will be back next week. You won't want to miss that recaption, African Mind with Dr. Bruce. Thank you for calling, Dr. Bruce. Dr. Rogers, hopefully we can get some more information on the conference to our listeners as we get closer to that September date. But I do want to say to you, you brought out some great points tonight, this afternoon. And the names that you mentioned and the process, and I think we have to do a better job of understanding where they were at their place in time and how that place in time impacted their choices and their reality. So can you speak for just a minute before we go to the last caller that I have on the line right now? How do you think Dr. Woodson was able to, you mentioned that he reached out to many of the other colleges and universities, the HBCUs, how did they make that connection with the universities and that network?
Okay. Well, you know, he had key people working with him and for him. He did what Garvey did. He reached out to the conscientious grassroots workers as well as some of those elite folk, but who had vision. See, a lot of the elites have vision. And one of the people that he reached out to was Charles Wesley, Dr. Charles Wesley, who was back in Brigham's Women. Where was he? He was at Howard. I think Wesley was at Howard.
Yeah, Wesley was at Howard University.
Yeah, okay. He was at Howard.
And as a matter, go ahead. You made me think of something else. Go ahead. Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah, and so he was able to get that connect with him, and that way he had that. And then T. Thomas Fortune, who was the newspaper publisher, writer, he didn't probably have much of it, was writing for the Negro World. He was the editor of the Negro World, Garvey's newspaper, and Garvey was right there in Harlem. And if you remember, Woodson's office was in Washington, D.C.
That's where I wanted to mention.
Yeah, yeah, see, so that's how. And what are some other connections, Dr. Bruce? I know I'm missing some. There were some more connections.
Yeah, there were so many, as you said, too. The fact that he had a lot of people writing for the Negro World, who are the Crisis Magazine, who were not a part of his movement, like Biden and other people, but they right, Biden was another one, that they didn't, you know, they weren't directly with Carter Woodson, but they saw the good that he did, and that there are a lot of our people like that today who may not be with the Nation of Islam, but they see the good that the Nation of Islam is. They may not have an X or may not be in the FY or the MDT, but they donate monetarily, they support, and they listen to Minister Farrakhan. So these are people that we have to, you know, coalesce or bring together.
That's right. That's exactly right.
True.
Another thing, Brother Marvin, I wanted to mention this, that he took the cue from Marcus Garvey on this one. Marcus Garvey knew that one of the most important elements that he had to have with him was the black woman.
Mm.
So if you went into his office over there in Washington, D.C., he had an office full of women.
And not to keep breaking in, Dr. Rogers, but you know, my experience is really, I forget about them sometimes. I actually went to Dr. Woodson's office. Of course, Dr. Woodson was deceased because he died in 1950. But I went to Dr. Woodson's office somewhere, I think, in the late 70s, and some of the women were still there working. As a matter of fact, that's who was in the office the day I went. Two women who were putting together the brochures that they would send out to the school system that would, you know, let them know the theme of the association that particular year. There's always a theme, like brother said from Montgomery, this year is wellness. But there were women working in Dr. Woodson's office every time, and I went by there two times.
That's exactly right. And that's what Marcus Garvey did. Marcus Garvey created something called the Black Cross Nurses, and it wasn't just about medical stuff. It was about that too. But those women did all kinds of stuff. They did sewing. They did everything. I mean, they were, because, you know, they're the worker bee. You got to have the worker bee.
That's true.
I got a question, Dr. Rogers. Dr. Rogers, it seemed like most of those movements were nationalist movements. What brought on, and they seem to be having some success amongst our people, what brought on the integrationalist movement so strong that it seemed like they got to a point like in the 50s and 60s that they were really clashing as to what was the best result?
Well, you know what? That's a good question, Brother George. And so you're asking which one was the strongest, you're saying?
Well, I'm asking, you know, what happened? Like, it seemed like the nationalist movements were working. What brought on the integrationalist thing that, to me, ultimately caused us to take a giant step backwards?
Okay. Well, one of the things that you do at the beginning of this show is you do the Willie Lynch thing.
Yes, sir.
Willie Lynch had a lot to do with this. In a lot of ways, though, because, you know, if you remember in Garvey's, Carter Woodson's book, he has a chapter 7, Dissensions and Weakness,
right.
And the ego, and that's something we really have to do as a people. We need to, and that's why, you know, the study in who the Negro is, we got to look at that ego thing. It has killed so many organizations. Do you think people like Martin Luther King that worked with him? Nope. They couldn't stand it.
Dang.
And it's documented truth that they didn't like him. And so they'll turn you in. They turned in Garvey. Did they like Garvey? Nope. Mm. They were jealous of it. Did they like Booker T? Nope.
Mm.
So that dissension, weakness, Willie Lynch thing has a tremendous, you know, and white folks do it too. We're not the only one doing it. Everybody does it. But it's just the resources are so few with us, we can't afford that. We can't afford to take those kind of things. And one last thing, back to that organization, of all those organizations around that time, and again, I haven't researched it at the level I'd like to. The most outstanding one with some solid principles and goals and connections was Noble Jewelry. They literally sent in. They sent in the at that time. That's the FBI was coming into existence. They went at him first. So now the question is, if he was just some little sidebar organization, why did they go after Noble Drew Ali first? Mm. And I can give you the quick answer, and Dr. Bridges can back this up. If he had an international connection, that nobody else had. That's how they went after Noble Drew Ali first. Is that your understanding of that, Dr. Bridges?
Yes, that's exactly right. He did have an international connection, and the powers that be have always been somewhat challenged when there's not just an organization, but in an individual leader like Noble Drew Ali or the organization has international connections that lets them know that it's bigger than just the Negro from Virginia or South Carolina, North Carolina, and that is a challenge to them.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
That's right.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce and Dr. Rogers. We're going to try to get one or two more calls in. I got 65. I'm going to keep you on the line, Dr. Bruce. 6511, you're live. We got Dr. Bruce in the house, along with Dr. Rogers, Brother George, and myself. Do you have a question or comment? 6511.
I'm just listening to the show, Pretty good show. Don't have nothing much to say, but y'all doing a very good job, you know, learning a lot more history and what I know before. So...
Sure, ask that brother where he's from, Brother Marvin. I don't know if he can hear me or not, but ask him where he's from. I hear the accent.
Yeah, you're on there, Brother Dr. Bruce.
I'm from the island of Antigua and Barbuda. Much people don't travel around in America to that. Bruce Bridges know a lot about those things, the history. Antigua and Barbuda.
Okay.
Caribbean,
that's
the Caribbean. Yeah, that's a pretty good show.
So, Brother Marvin, you like Noble Drew Ali. Now you have international connections. There's a brother called from Antigua and Barbuda, so watch it now.
But I live here
all right.
In North Carolina, Durham. Yeah, I'm always on the show every weekend and the one on Tuesday, 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, your
all
show.
Right.
Yeah. I'm
Thank you so much.
My friend here listening. Y'all doing a pretty good job. Capture the African
Thank
mind.
Thank you.
Okay.
And you know, Brother Marvin, and I know it's about our time's up, but what I did want to say, and that is that one thing we have to realize that we as a people in the United States have connections, these are our people, black people all over the world, no matter what they think and no matter how their minds have been destroyed. But in Antigua and Barbuda, where this brother said he's from, they went through slavery and emancipation and had
That's
to fight.
Right.
And they were cane cutters. We didn't cut much sugar cane here, but they had tobacco. They also had cotton, and they had
cotton.
To revolt. So it's the same thing, same system of international capitalism to put black people and people of color to work for the benefit of European powers.
We're getting the
All right.
And the own. Okay. Thank you for that show. Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. We're going to try one more before we get out of here. We're going to over to 1295. You're on live with Dr. Bruce and Dr. Rogers and myself and Brother George. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
Peace, brother. This is Brother Khalil. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, Brother Khalid.
Peace, my brother. Thank you, peace, as always, Brother Marvin, Brother Akeem, Brother George, and Dr. Bruce and Dr. Robert.
Yes, sir.
All the comments. I'm doing well, brother. I want to take advantage of your time in a way that I want to ask a question to help me in my journey of being better to myself, and in a way that as I learn that I can also share that when I'm interacting with my brothers and my sisters. You mentioned the word pedagogy, so I want to ask you your opinion so I can take it into my days coming. And Brother George just asked you a question, and your answer just really opened the door for what I wanted to ask. You mentioned the ego of us. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with Brother Marvin about this last week, and it is my study and it is my belief that I'll need to restore ourselves, okay, mm-hmm. to our original selves. And that ego and things like you said, other nationalities or races of people do it as well. But I think we're doing it as a learned behavior. And so if we can restore ourselves, I think we can eradicate that and restore ourselves to loyalty, integrity, humility, honesty, okay? So these virtues of life, you know, so... In order to, and you said it again, because you know we can talk a lot, like you said, we've been talking people, and so we're the things that we can do, and I don't say that negatively toward our people. You know, I say that because I personally believe is we don't have a better pedagogy, we don't have a better way of doing things, and I think that it's missed in a lot of our organizations. And so I'm asking you, what do you think about some better ways that we can move on a daily basis to be better to ourselves that starts mm-hmm. with those virtues of life, bettering our character? Because I think if we individually deal with our own stuff, whether it be our escapism because we don't want to deal with the reality of the war we're in, whether it is our egos, whether it is our fear of the devil, our hatred of self, whatever it is, what do you think as a way of moving and acting better, or, you know, that we can implement and to ourselves and then hold each other accountable, you know, as we share with one another, where we can develop better character? And I define better character as, again, those virtues of life, loyalty. If you're not going to turn your brother in, honesty, you're going to be truthful to yourself and your brother, you know, integrity, right, humility, right? So, and there's one more I'm leaving out, but that's my question to you, sir, and anybody else that want to input, please.
And Brother Marvin, I can answer that, not briefly, but, you know, I can give you the umbrella to that this question that,
yes, sir.
Some other time.
Right ahead. We got about 5 minutes.
Okay. I think one of the things that I see, you know, and I'm 77 years old, and I've been around a little while, and I know what was done to me. We had people in our community that all of the stuff I'm talking about and all the stuff Dr. Briggs has talked about, they knew that. But the way they showed it is they worked with us. They created organizations where they could teach us self-sufficiency through these organizations. They taught us honesty through these organizations. And they put their hands on us. And when I mean that, I mean they got down with us. They did the work of these things and got down with these children, these young people, these young minds, and worked with us. Knuckle and bolt, wrist and fist. And showed us, not talked to us about it, they showed us how to do that. And Dr. Bridges knows what I'm talking about. I came from a hometown where there was a man that didn't teach kids how to make a house. He had them make the house. They built the house.
brick house. And Bruce knows that. His name was Mr. Tucker. And he had a, he worked in the industrial arts department of my high school. And he had them to move that house from the location of the school to another property, and some people bought it. That's how you do what I think he asked me to do. There had to be integrity in that process. Them kids weren't no brick masons. They didn't know anything about that. You know that. You know, he was. He had them, he did what Booker T. Washington did. He had them make the cement and the bricks that built Tuskegee. Mm. Tuskegee was built by bricks that the students made.
Mm.
That's how you do it. That's how we do that, my brother. And I hope that that sheds a little light. We gotta marinate on that a little bit, and think about how that works. And they want to do it. The kids want to do it, especially this generation, because they are, this generation is a lot wiser sometimes. These kids are different, but they
all
want
right.
To
well,
sit down with them. Yes.
Dr. Rogers, we are running out of time. So
okay.
We could get just a closing comment from you. And again, thank you for your wisdom and your scholarship. We appreciate you. Continue to educate our people. Continue to do the work of empowering our people with knowledge and wisdom and understanding. Dr. Rogers, final comments.
Yeah, and I will. I'll do that to my dying days. I will definitely continue. Comment is let's be worker bees. We need leaders sometimes, you do, but you need to be worker bees. You got to get into the hive of the honey, and you produce your bit. And if you can support your brother or sister next to you, do that. But get down into the beehive, and let's make this honey together.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Great show. We'll have you back soon to get into these chapters. Dr. Bruce, we thank you so much for joining us. We'll have you next week. So y'all tell a friend, tell a family member to come and join us as we continue to educate our people. Brother George, final comments.
No, sounds good. It was a very great, it was a great show, Dr. Rogers. I mean, just more education for them. So I appreciate it, Brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. And again, these opportunities for us to learn and grow and educate and inspire each other really matter. Here's the thing. You matter. We matter. And as we continue to coalesce and come together, we don't all have to think the same, but we do have to do the work of working together to improve ourselves and communities, our mindsets, and even our confidence in each other. We're going to have to do that. It's up to us. And it's brothers like Dr. Bruce and Brother George and Dr. Rogers and so many others that called in today. If we would just commit to working together and finding ways to do that work consistently without anger or hostile or bitterness, to do the work. And the work will speak for itself. So until next week, thank you, brothers and sisters, for calling. We really appreciate you because you make the show. It's Dr. Rogers. It's Dr. Bruce. Brother George, and myself saying thank you and so long until next week. Peace and blessings, brothers and sisters. We love you.
Hotel, Asante Asana.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.